Right now, we're going to bring on our next live guest for the morning. We've got Mike Bowden-Distel joining us here, our rail expert at FreightWaves, to talk a little bit about what has changed 1 year since the East Palestine train derailment. Mike, thank you for being here.
No problem. Yeah, almost a year. It was February 3rd of last year.
Yeah, so just almost a year coming up at the end of this week. And it seems like there was a lot of talk about progress, especially when we come from the view of Congress on rail safety, but not a whole lot of actual impact has been made. What has changed so far in the rail safety space since the unfortunate situation a year ago?
Yeah, so I think the big narrative is it's been a year, Congress hasn't done anything. Why do we have a do-nothing Congress? And I think there's a case to be made that we should let the NTSB finish its investigation and see what actually caused that derailment and proceed from there. So the NTSB has been undergoing this investigation for, really since the derailment happened, and the status is that they're planning to have a full report sometime this spring or in the summer to outline all of those things. And it's really not any longer than one of those reports would typically take, which maybe it was made a little bit longer, because they had a hearing in June, which might have given rise to some additional questions. But really what's changed so far is that the railroad industry has taken some voluntary steps in certain corridors. They've added additional hot box detectors. They've done a few other things. So the AAR and the railroads have taken some steps on their own. But you're right, there hasn't been any, congressional change, that may come. I think that the Railway Safety Act, which was put out there in the weeks following the derailment, was a little bit of just a kitchen sink approach. But it still remains to be seen what the legacy of the derailment, is. Usually when you have something that's that high profile, it does give rise to additional safety legislation, which is something we've seen in the past.
So there's a lot of different players when it comes to this rail safety approach, and it almost feels like it has to be multiple fold, right? On one side, you've got the Federal Railroad Administration, which will put together rulemakings and come up with true legislation to govern this. You've got the Surface Transportation Board, which can put out recommendations, although they're in kind of some turmoil of their own, trying to replace their chairman, Marty Oberman. And then you have local governments, your local cities, your towns, your municipalities, even your state governments. And then you have the railroads themselves, as you mentioned. And Norfolk Southern has actually taken a step to join the close call reporting system and is that first class one to do so. Is this a good step forward in their progress?
Yeah, I think so. I think I like what the AAR has done so far, adding some of those additional, hot box detectors, taking a little bit more of a look at some of the training techniques. I mean, there were some other derailments that, outside of East Palestine and some other safety incidents, that some of those occurred in yards. And, we talked about some of those on FreightWaves, where maybe the, people are training the new employees didn't have enough training, themselves. I mean, as you mentioned, there's a lot of different organizations, some of which have, overlapping interests. Like, a lot of different organizations want to see the two-man crew mandated, where you have to have two people in the locomotive. So that'll likely be required one way or another. I mean, right now it's required by the union rules, but it's likely that at some point, there are rules that are go beyond just the railroads voluntarily adopting, actions like additional hot box detectors. So, but it does remain to be seen exactly what caused that derailment. It was a very unusual situation that wheel bearing heated up to the extent that it did in such a short period of time. It's not clear whether it was a manufacturing defect. It's not clear whether the leasing company should have maintained the car better. It's not clear whether the railroad employees had enough time and resources to maintain all those cars, or if they were just rushed through, like as been sort of alleged. So, even though the railroad took all the sort of public heat, there are a lot of players when it comes to a rail car.
So one of those other players that we haven't yet mentioned is the influence from the unions. And of course, before this derailment happened, it seemed not necessarily fortuitous, but almost kind of destined, right? We had just come out of those very, very intense labor negotiations at the beginning of December. Then the derailment happened less than 2 months later. Was this something that now we are continuing to see the unions use as almost some leverage to increase maybe safety and pressure on the class ones to not only take care of their membership, their worker membership who are employed there, but also be good stewards of the places and the areas that these trains run through?
Yeah, I mean, the unions would say that the railroad employees have been asked to do too much with too few resources, that they've cut into the bone, that, you know, like the way they would tie that to a derailment like this was the suggestion that the employees only had, you know, a minute and a half to investigate, or maybe it was 30 seconds, or there was some short period of time where they had to investigate each rail car. It really was not sufficient to, you know, conduct a full sort of manual investigation of the rail car, and that if the railroads run their operations too lean, then things like, you know, safety checks can be overlooked. So, you know, I agree with you. It's something that the unions, you know, are using as leverage, and it causes them to redouble their efforts to maintain that rule for the two-person crew, where you have the locomotive engineer and the conductor required in the train, or railroads would like to just have a locomotive engineer. I don't think we'll see it. I think there are too many, you know, interests that wanting to keep that two-person crew.
So going forward with all these stakeholders now pressing forward on their individual issues, what do we think is the next big step? Do we see more of the class ones being forced to join this intense safety coalition? Do we see some true legislation coming down? Or because we, of course, are in this election year, things are going to be shaken up likely at the end of November. Are things just really not going to move the needle at all in 2024?
So I don't think it's a legislative priority in an election year. Biden administration wants economic wins. I don't think this is a top of mind for most voters. So I'm not sure Congress is going to do anything, you know, barring what could come out of that report. I mean, I think the NTSB issues a report, and if it really identifies what the problem is, you know, I can only speculate what will come out of that. But then, you know, I could see either congressional regulation or some rule from, you know, that would maybe potentially go through much faster from, you know, the FRA, or maybe the railroads would just voluntarily adopt. They see the report and they say, okay, you know, we're just going to, you know, adopt this rule. Maybe the FRA makes a rule also that's in alignment with it. So I do think we could see, you know, some additional safety rules or safety practices this year as a result of what the NTSB comes up with.
And then, of course, final question on that from the legislative standpoint, the regulatory standpoint, the STB, the Surface Transportation Board, looking for that replacement of Marty Oberman, a priority or not, as he's expected to stay on a little bit past his tenure?
It's certainly a priority. I don't know that it's going to, you know, the STB's focus is not, you know, primarily safety. It's more on, you know, things like, you know, approving mergers, you know, economic, you know, regulations, you know, making sure the railroads are following the common carrier safety obligation and delivering adequate service and rate cases. So it is important. You know, I don't think Marty Oberman is someone who can fully be replaced, because I don't know that any board member has been that sort of aggressive and sort of has that deep of knowledge of the railroad industry. Is really, I thought, an asset, even though the railroads are happy to see him go.
All right, Michael, thank you for joining us with this insight. We'll be sure to catch up with you more as we see this develop in 2024.
Great. Thank you.
All right, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. We'll be back with our next carrier update in just a few minutes.